Regular listeners to the show will know that inevitably, when we're talking about urban design, the conversation turns to the question of density. You know, it's a funny word, density. I have to say, the idea of designing a low-fat city, which I heard this week, is a completely new one to me. It sounds more like something you do to help Godzilla manage her weight. Anyway, how to design a low-fat city. By the end of our discussion now, I'm hoping to prove to you that density is not a four-letter word. Tuesday Udell is Senior Policy Advisor for the Hart Foundation. Tuesday is going to be presenting at the 8th International Urban Design Conference in Brisbane next week, and her paper is called We Love Density. And architect Guy Perry is a leading thinker on how designing and planning by developers and government can help create healthier cities. Guy's ACOM's Asia Pacific Executive Director for Buildings and Places, and he's based in Hong Kong. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tuesday, tell me about the research commissioned by the Hart Foundation around the density of developments and health, and in particular, what you're calling your six Ds and a P.
Yes, well, we did start with density as sort of being the foundation, because from there we found that higher density neighbourhoods were associated with more walking for transport, but we knew that density didn't work alone and we wanted to find out what those other elements were. So we called them the six Ds and a P, and density is the first D, so that's all about the power of nearness, the viability of shops and services and transport as we have more people in an area. And then, you know, we have more people on the street and we have that perceived safety. And so that all adds to a more walkable and vibrant community. The second D was around diversity of land uses. And we were looking at mixed use, retail and amenity and services all being together, but also mixed housing types being together. So not having that conformity of housing types, but having a mix of density as well. The third D was around design. So that refers to street connectivity and directness of travel. So we prefer the grid versus the curved street layouts. Intersection density, so smaller blocks, makes for better walking routes for people. And the fourth D was destination accessibility, and that includes open space. And that's a really critical part of our work, is ensuring that we have lots of places to walk, but particularly increasing the amount of quality, flexible, active open space that we have, just to account for the sort of lack of private open space.
I mean, obviously, each of these Ds are pretty intensely interconnected. The density won't work without
absolutely
good design solutions, that diversity of model. I just need to kind of cut in, though, to ask one thing, which is why grids over curved street structures? What's the thinking there?
It gives people more direct routes to walk places. So instead of having to walk around, and it's fine when you're in a car and you can drive that extra 5 minutes to get through the curvy streets. But if you think about even Adelaide's street network and the laneways that you have, smaller blocks and more direct routes makes it easier for people to find different ways to walk to places and more direct routes.
So,
and it actually makes walking easier. Smaller block sizes makes walking easier for people.
So healthier isn't about forcing them to do more difficult things. It's actually making it more appealing to choose to be a pedestrian.
Yes, and making it easier to walk to places. So that's about having destinations, but also having them very accessible to people and being able to walk there quickly. And the fifth D was distance to public transport. And of course, we're talking about new neighbourhoods here built on existing transport networks and around existing transport hubs. And that's really important. Transport has to be within walkable distance. We know that every transport trip begins and ends with a walk. So that's really important for people.
So and there are these in our sixth D?
The sixth D is demand management. Well, it's actually a P. It stands for parking. And we found that the more parking you have available and the cheaper it is, the more people will tend to drive there. So if you think about Oxford Street in London, where you can't park, you always catch the train there. So less parking means more space for housing, employment, recreation, open space, etc. And the P stands for placemaking. So we're all about transforming streets into great places for people, making the public realm a really vibrant place, you know, making streets a destination in their own right.
This notion of the kind of healthy outcomes of urban design is a really interesting one. And a bit of terminology I know you use, Guy, that interested me was the idea of suburban cellulite. What's that?
Well, suburban cellulite is when you begin to look at development parcels on a scale that is simply not a scale that you can connect on foot or in many cases even on a bicycle. And that means that each developer, for example, would do a section of development that may have one entry, may even have two, but it's a series of inwardly oriented streets. And the lack of connectivity between those kinds of block developments means that you really no longer have an option to get out there on your 2 feet and get around. So you're going to be pretty much forced into your vehicle. Now, once you do that, your whole lifestyle pattern changes. And the reason I also compared somewhat jokingly to the cellulite is that just as it is difficult to get rid of cellulite on your body physically, it is very difficult to get rid of this kind of urban fabric as it is developed, because it's anchored with deed restrictions, which are actually harder to change than zoning. So we need to be very careful about the kinds of fabrics that we develop. And I look at the healthier tissue of more dense fabrics of city building, as was just referred to. I think it's a very good point. The block size is a very important measure in terms of the potential healthiness of an urban environment.
So you're Hong Kong-based now, so obviously there's a high level of density there. What have you found about kind of tower developments in Hong Kong and the relationship between distance from the ground, say, and obesity for children in particular?
In addition to working with ACOM, I'm also teaching at Hong Kong University, and we're working with the School of Public Health there, where we are noticing that there is a higher proportion of children who are overweight and diabetic on the upper floors of high-rises. And as you may know, over half of the population in Hong Kong lives above the 15th floor. So this is quite an issue for them. The key issue there is that the kids are not getting out as often as they should. They're not getting down to those playgrounds. So that means we may have to rethink about the way we make towers in very high-density environments. Do we actually start to think about playgrounds not only at the ground level, but do we start to incorporate different activities within the tower itself to make them closer for the children to access? But it's not just children. It's the population in general. And we're looking at even elevators that may not stop at each floor. So you would have a service elevator that could stop at each floor, but the passenger elevators may actually stop on every third floor, which would create a little bit of a kind of mini square when you come off, bringing together people from different levels and forcing at least two-thirds of them to either go up or down the stairs each time they go into their unit. So there's small things like that that can make a big difference.
Guy, how do we go about increasing density with a healthy lifestyle in mind?
Well, I think one of the first things is you need to look at some of the streets themselves. Often in suburbs, the streets are much larger than they really need to be for the traffic carrying capacity that they're required to handle. And we look at how those streets can be made to be as comfortable as possible to walk, to cycle down. It sometimes comes back to thinking a little bit more on a shared street basis. In other words, a shared street is a street that doesn't say, this is purely for automobiles. I'm speaking about the smaller streets now, the ones that tie together the neighborhoods, but that those streets are really meant for people to drive, to ride a bicycle, in some cases maybe even to walk. Cities like Tokyo, 90% of the streets are actually these kinds of shared streets. The other thing is you can look at the main arteries that are serving these metropolitan districts and say those areas can be densified and begin to provide another dimension, both in terms of their commercial activities, so office space, but also in terms of residential offer. And the residential offer can, of course, be apartments, can be townhouses, but I think we need to start thinking a little bit differently about building that is only, say, residential or only, say, office, that you can begin to look at buildings that can serve both functions, almost like loft buildings. And you'll find that even in those suburban locations, especially as children grow up and they may not want to completely leave the district that they've grown up in, that they would find that's a much more comfortable place to live economically than, say, having to move all the way into the city. So you want to try to retain some of that young talent, some of those youngsters that have grown up in a neighborhood, and you need to create environments that are going to be enticing for them. And part of that is creating, I think, more animated urban corridors within a fabric that may otherwise be relatively low density. So you can have both, and I think you have to have both in those areas.
You're listening to Blueprint for Living on RN, and we're talking density in our cities. Tuesday, Udell, The title of the talk you're giving next week at the International Urban Design Conference in Brisbane is We Love Density. And even in that title is embedded the idea that not everyone is comfortable with it. People have a kind of weird reaction where they go, oh, it's fine, but I don't want it in my neighbourhood. Why do you think there is that kind of ambivalence about the value of density, particularly in Australia?
Yes, we did hear a lot of negative feedback from the community when we first started this project, and that's what inspired us to do a really positive project around density and show how density can actually contribute to the health and well-being of the communities that live there. And so we have been very positive about this in the face of some community backlash. And the report Does Density Matter has some really great case studies from around Australia that show aspects of the 6Ds and the P within them and how that's increased the walking and also reduced the car dependency. And we've got some great examples of where...
I particularly like, you give an example of Lightsview, a new eastern suburb in Adelaide. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, that's one of our favourites because the Heart Foundation was involved in that from the beginning in the master planning stage. So it's about 8 kilometres from Adelaide's central business district. The density is about 39 dwellings per hectare, and it's a 100-hectare development that started being built in 2008. The great thing about it was that the developer CIC, from the beginning in their tender, suggested that they use the Heart Foundation's Healthy by Design guidelines within their master planning. So we employed a social planner to work with the developers and implement those guidelines. So just an example of some of the sorts of things that were developed is that they have extensive path networks throughout the development and shared paths not only within the development that connect the destinations but also that connect Lightsview to outside of the development and to all the services that are around the new suburb. There's parks within close walking distance of every home, so around 400 metres to every single park. And parks don't always have to be huge. You know, we have small parks and larger parks. It has the street grid layout, connects to a lot of existing bus routes. And the footpaths are 1.5 metres wide, so that is a really good size for gophers and wheelchair users as well as pedestrians and cyclists.
Thanks for that, Tuesday and Guy. Tuesday is Senior Policy Advisor for the Heart Foundation, and architect Guy Perry is from ACOM. But joining me now is Hassel's Global Head of Urban Design, David Tickle. David, you've been working on redesigning the Sydney Walk app as a solution to increasing density. People would know the classic walk up. It's the 3 to 4 story apartment buildings that dominate suburbs like Bondi. So just to kick us off, what are some of the problems with these walk ups from a design perspective?
Well, the walk up apartment building really is a product of its time. It was developed in the mid 20th century, a time when private car ownership was on the rise rapidly. So they tend to prioritize cars over people. And you can see that through garage doors facing the street, concrete driveways instead of green space. And architecturally, they tend to lack variety and interest. We do have that very standard 3 to 4 story model. And you see whole suburbs that were converted from single houses into a very homogeneous walk-up neighborhood style. And I think importantly, one thing as well is around just diversity of apartment types. They tend to be full of 2-bedroom apartments, which doesn't really reflect all of the different family structures that we have in a society. And certainly as people move through different stages of life, that single 2-bedroom housing model is not going to accommodate all those different changes that a person would have over their lifespan.
So now, while you haven't built them yet, you've done extensive modelling. Talk us through what changes you're proposing to that conventional walk-up model.
So within our study, we looked at not as an individual building, but we thought about a neighbourhood or a street of walk-up buildings and thought about what kind of potential we could extract out of consolidating a number of buildings together. So we looked at 3 buildings and we thought if we demolish 2 of those buildings, that gives us quite a large site to start thinking about renewal or reconfiguration of that site. Then we introduced into the site a whole diversity of housing types, from 4-bedroom terrace houses to smaller 1 to 2-bedroom apartments. And we thought about creating a greater diversity of architectural form, from lower 2 to 3 story buildings up to 12 story towers, just to give that diversity and interest architecturally. But importantly, by reconfiguring the whole site, we were able to create one large green space at the center of the site, as well as a whole range of smaller open spaces from rooftop gardens to balconies to vegetable gardens as well. So it gave people a whole diversity of spaces within the site that I guess give you a whole lot of different activities and different ways that people might interact with each other.
So would that also mean mixed kind of density within that site? So maybe a site that was once three walk-ups would be a tower on the front and some lower-rise stuff behind, or a particular neighbourhood's better to keep a kind of single-level density?
It gives us the flexibility to think about different neighbourhoods or different contexts to say, well, some neighbourhoods, you know, a taller building might be okay. In other cases, we may need to reduce the height of buildings to respond to heritage buildings or to ensure that we don't overshadow open space. So it really is building up an idea of quite a flexible model of development or of renewal to ensure we get that diversity, that choice of housing, all of those great open spaces that would be the basis of that community.
Well, I was interested in that because it's not just open spaces, of course, it's communal spaces. So it would change the way in which people in those different residencies related to one another. How much is that part of the plan that you're putting forward?
It's really critical. I think at the broader metropolitan scale, the quality of public domain and public spaces is a critical factor in terms of the livability, the amenity of the city, the way that you attract people to actually to live in that city, to work in that city. But then at the more local neighbourhood scale, those spaces are the things that really bind a community together. So they become really important factors in terms of thinking about the way that individuals interact and how you build up that very strong sense of community. Looking at the model that we develop, we increase the density of the floor space and the number of apartments, but we also doubled the amount of usable open space that one of these neighbourhoods would have.
Surely you're going to meet a bit of resistance. People who don't like change, don't like the talk about bulldozing of what's already there, are nervous about this kind of shift in density in their own backyard. Aren't they going to be in shadow of your new towers? How do you deal with people's resistance to that stuff?
We believe that this is a really positive view of urban renewal. All of our cities, and particularly Sydney as a large global city, is continuing to grow and evolve, and so change will happen. I think that's an absolute in a city like Sydney. And we wanted to make sure that we put forward a very optimistic view of renewal and the kinds of benefits it would bring to the community. So a diversity of housing, possibly looking at other uses on the site, so retail or workplaces, creating better open spaces, more activation of streets, all of those things have a very strong public benefit. And so we're confident that this kind of proposition would be one that people would see the benefit of more broadly.
Many thanks, David.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with David Tickle. David's Hassell Global Head of Urban Design. Let us know what you think. Do you have ideas on how we could do density better? What are your concerns about retrofitting our cities to be the cities of the future rather than the cities of the past? Leave a comment on this story on the Blueprint for Living program page